What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
Rod and I are live talking 49ers and Titans in a bit of a sleepy game, I think. The Niners got ahead, and the Titans, you know, the Titans kind of came back later in the game. Some of that was because the Niners just had issues closing out in the fourth quarter. And some of it is because Titans were actually running the football very well against the Niners. But yeah, it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was a competitive game, but it was also kind of too close for comfort a little bit at times. Ultimately the Niners are the better team, but it was a game coming off of a bye. They really needed to take care of business. And I think they mostly did. Titans made it a little bit closer late, but good win. And I think coming into the last three game stretch of the season, kind of the win that they needed. As far as I can remember, outside of Pretty Ricky, I'm not sure if did anyone else get hurt? Did anyone else have to go to the blue tent?
I don't know. I didn't see anybody that had to go to the blue tent. But yeah, it was honestly, really, if you look at the last three games, that was the last of the bad teams on our schedule.
Yeah. They are going to, it's almost like a prove it stretch here. It's like, okay, we know that the 49ers haven't had the hardest schedule, and now the Patsy teams are gone. You got Colts, Bears, and Seahawks to end the season, and the Seahawks take advantage of things were looking kind of okay for Grandpa out there, Phil Rivers, but then I saw the Seahawks were able to kick like six field goals or whatever to come back and win that game. So Niners play the Colts on Monday, so they get, after coming off of a bye, this actually works out pretty well. You have the bye, then you play. Then you have an extra day to get ready for the Colts, and then the Bears. It's Sunday night, so it's a little bit better than, you know, a Sunday morning game for sure, coming off of the Monday night, and then close with the Seahawks. The scheduling aspect, the rest aspect, kind of bodes well for them. But like you said, this is kind of like, this is prove it time. This is like, okay, how good are you? I could see them, you know, winning two out of three. I could see them losing all three games. And then with however the Lions finish the season and the Packers, and I forget who else is right there, but this is the make it or break it for the playoffs.
It really is. So it's going to tell us a lot moving in. And, you know, I was kind of hoping that for better or for worse, that Seattle would be in a position where definitely week 18 didn't matter, but it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. It looks like that's going to be a game that matters if it's for number one seed or the division. I just don't see how in the next three games or the next two games they would be able to put themselves into a position where that last game just simply doesn't matter.
The Rams and the Seahawks are about to have a slugfest next week.
Yeah, that is, and, that is great scheduling.
And Davante Adams, I saw he came up lame. He's got a hamstring thing. I was talking to Brad about this, and he was saying how he wasn't sure, you know, it could possibly be without Adams just because of how crazy hamstring injuries can be. So, but and yeah, Thursday, it's tremendous. So. Yeah, right. That's the other thing. So yeah, that's a big one. And I guess if you're the Niners, maybe you want who do you want to win that game?
I have no idea. I really, you know, I have a hard time rooting for either of them. But yeah, it's like just from a strategic standpoint, I guess you would want Seattle to win because we have a game over them,
right?
And we have another game against them. So theoretically, if you're talking about being able to handle your own business, you would want Seattle to be the one you're chasing rather than the Rams. Because I know we split, but I know that if it comes down to, you know, margin of victory, I think that's the next tiebreaker. They kicked our ass the second time. So
yeah,
I think if it came down to it for the division, which, you know, as crazy as it is, we're just a game behind. You would want Seattle to be the one that we are being compared to for tiebreakers as opposed to the Rams, I would think. So that's why I would go with Seattle just on that score.
Yeah. And then so like you said, it comes down. Okay, so the tiebreakers for the division goes head to head, then division record, then common games record. Do you know if it works the same? Does it work the same for the rest of the playoffs?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Because if it comes, like, let's say the Niners and the Rams come down to, you know, let's say the Seahawks win. And then let's say the Niners and the Rams end up tied for second place in the NFC West. Head to head, they're even. And then best one loss tied percentage in games within the division. Currently, right now, the Niners are, I think they only have one loss in the division. They're 4-1.
Just to the Rams.
Mm-hmm. And the Rams would be 4-2 if the Seahawks beat them. So, yeah, I think you're right. You do root for the Seahawks in this situation.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, there you go. 49ers fans, now you know who you're rooting for between the Rams and the Seahawks. We're rooting Seahawks here. Slinging Sammy Darnold, man, and we're rooting for him to throw some touchdown passes. All right, so I guess even before we get to the game today, when we were gone, we were on our bye week too. The Brandon Ayuk situation kind of settled itself. The Niners put him on the reserve or the pup or whatever you want to call it, the injured list for the rest of the season. So he's not going to see the field. And after the press conference today, Kyle Shanahan said the reason that they did is because they just haven't seen him in a long time. So he hasn't been at headquarters. And it sounds like there's been little or no communication. And I think we were hoping once kind of we saw the writing on the wall, it's like, well, they're going to cut him. You know, maybe he'll play. I don't think you and I thought he was going to play, but there was like some wondery about that. Is he going to play? And it's done. He is unable to play. The divorce is going to happen in the offseason. It's the last we've seen Brandon Ayuk in a 49ers jersey. Really unfortunate the way that it happened. And I'm sure someone will do the reporting after the season is over as far as exactly what happened and why it happened and how it happened and who's at fault. And then depending on who does the writing, you'll have to discern whether that writer is a little closer to the ownership side or a little closer to the player side. So we'll have to play that game, but I'm bummed because it didn't necessarily need to happen this way, but the communication and the expectation and everything just wasn't there. And we're not going to see this guy really show out. He's in the prime of his career, and he would have been Brock Purdy's number one target. And he probably, if they would have continued to play together, he's probably, you know, having great seasons with the Niners. And now you did all of that to stay with him. He got hurt, and it's all for naught because you didn't even trade him. And now you get nothing except for maybe some cap money, cap relief help. But then you got the dead money thing. So it's just an unfortunate experience. And, you know, just sad that it happened the way that it did, because I wanted to see this dude play football, but it's not happening.
What I want to hear the reporting on is if, and I like you say, you'll have to take any of the reporting with a grain of salt, but I want to know, and even reading between the lines, you can figure this out. If they realized that they had checkmated themselves when they voided that guaranteed money, because, you know, they were playing it out like he might be coming back. He might be coming back. We can open the window. He might be coming back. But let's be realistic. If he had no guaranteed money going forward from as far back as July, there was no way in hell he was ever. Why would he play or practice with no money guaranteed going forward? That doesn't make any sense to me. So my question is, was the voiding a knee-jerk reaction to something specific and they hadn't thought it out? Because my thought is, even if you decide that you want to move on, if you leave that carrot there, it puts you in a position where, look, you know what it is, we know what it is, but if you come back, you've got this $27 million that you are assured to get. So that's a little bit of security. If you come back, you get to, you know, show the league that you are back. And we are in a position where we can at least get something for you. That all went out the window. Once I found out that money was gone since back in July, I'm surprised he showed up at all. I mean, because they completely de-incentivized him playing at all. And I've been having these arguments for the last 3 days. Well, as a man, he got that $24 million and I got that. I already got that. There's no incentive for me to move from here. I got the $24 million. I cannot play and have that and just get ready for some combine situation and head on into free agency. I have thoughts on this, so I'm sorry. I'll get to the game in a minute. But
the game is what it was, and this is kind of it's going to be a story for a little while. So I think it's important because we didn't get to talk about this last week. So go ahead, continue. And I have a thought on your thought too.
And then my second thought is Ryan Williams is the best agent in football. Maybe even professional sports. Let's recap what he was able to do. While under contract, he somehow kind of conjures up a trade market for his client and has bidders, gets contract offers, gets trade offers while he's under contract. So he basically has a mini free agency. Niners decide that they don't want the 3 and the 4, which is, again, another sidebar. There has always seemed to be a disconnect with what they felt his trade value was versus what his actual value was. I remember in March, the notion was that what they wanted from Pittsburgh was 2 ones, which is franchise money, which just objectively says you think that his contract should be the average of the top 5 receivers in the league, but that's not what you wanted to pay him. Mm-hmm. But that's what you thought your compensation for trading him should be. That just doesn't make any sense. So then I want to wrap this up quick. So then his contract is signed. He gets hurt. He gets $48 million to rehab. And then depending on how the story goes, because I don't know, this is conjecture at this point. Mm-hmm. Did they finesse the team into voiding that contract and in essence making him, he got $48 million to rehab and then finesse them into voiding that money and in essence making him an unrestricted free agent, which is crazy because I've had this again. I've discussed this all week. So again, well, he's not a free agent. Well, look, where did voiding that money leave us? It left us with a contract that has zero value because when you take the guaranteed money at it, look at it. If you look at it like this next season, he's like scheduled to play for $1 million because it was a low base salary with the $24 million in guaranteed money, which made it make sense. There's no way in hell anybody's trading for a contract that pays him $1 million next year because he's not going to play on it. So why would I trade for a contract problem when I could just wait until June 1st or whenever you release him and then we can just start our relationship fresh and it can be lovebirds and I can woo him. I don't want to start our relationship with that old baggage. So you're not trading it. So there's that. And no matter how you might try to create some sort of leverage this contract, because I saw something that Lombardi reported something like that a few weeks ago. Is that, well, without the guaranteed money now, the Niners might be interested in just keeping him. They're not doing this for another year. You know you're not doing it for another year. The entire league knows you're not doing this for another year. So now you're not going to trade him. You're not going to keep him. So you have to release him. So this has been an unmitigated disaster for this front office. And I would love somebody like Bill Simmons. I know he's not local, but whoever the equivalent, I guess Kawakami would be somebody who I would trust that could do something that I would, because like Silver, I mean, he's got the access, but
Tim's not going to write something just because Jed York is going to be happy that he writes it. Tim is actually going to be the opposite. He's going to be like, wait, if Jed York is happy I'm writing this, then this is probably wrong. Like that's how he thinks as a journalist. Okay, so what I was thinking, very similar to how you're laying it out, I think it's one of two things, and they're probably related in some way. Now, here's what I don't know. Let's say BA was healthy.
Uh-huh.
He's under contract. He's healthy. What has to happen in which he is forced to come back to play football? What are the scenarios in which the Niners go, we are, we want this guy to play. Our doctors say that he's healthy and he is refusing to play. What happens in that scenario? And I'm not saying that that's happened, but I'm wondering where the who's got the leverage in that scenario.
Well, that you would be right if at any point he was medically cleared, but that hasn't happened.
Right.
So that, that's a non-starter. And, they've been talking about, again, talk about acting like a spurned lover. They released something yesterday or the day before they run together, talking about they are preparing to go after that $48 million signing bonus, which is crazy because if you look at the CBA, it's Section 4, Article 4, Section 9, which covers recouping or forfeiture of bonus money. There's only four scenarios where that could happen. If he retires, think Barry Sanders. If he retires voluntarily, they have the right to go back to go after that money. If he gets hurt with a non-football injury, there was an Atlanta Falcon who got hurt riding ATVs and gave up his money.
Sure.
After Aaron Hernandez, because fun fact, they were able, after a 7-year court battle, they didn't have to pay his widow the $2 million that they withheld, but they could not get back the $6 million that they had already given him until now. So now that changed the main. So if you get incarcerated, that is a reason for them to be able to come back and recoup that money. And then the fourth one is holdout. If you hold out, they can go after that money. But it, according to the CBA, those are the only four scenarios that allow you to go after that money. So number one, he was hurt on the job. So that's a non-starter. And then if you wanted to make a beef about him not playing, he hasn't been cleared. So he could not, even if he wanted to come play or come practice, he would not be able to because he has not received medical clearance to do so.
Okay, so who's doing the clearing, though? Is it his personal doctor? Thing. Is it the 49ers personal doctor? Because if it's a 49ers doctor and he's not at headquarters, how do they communicate whether or not he can actually play?
I don't know the machinations of that, which is kind of got murky here because depending, spend a lot of time with the CPA, it gets real murky in terms of what you're able to do in terms of a player's medical care. That was a big thing with Christian Wilkins with the Raiders, in that the breakdown with they felt he should have surgery. His doctors told him that they could, he could rest and do physical therapy. And there was just loggerheads there. And I know that the ruling came back that they can't make him have surgery. You know, that's not something right. that is within the purview of their contract, is for them to dictate his how he cares for his injury. So that's interesting. Now it's interesting in terms of reporting and being here, and there's fines and things that can be asserted with that. So if the contract says he has to do XYZ for rehab and he doesn't do that, there might be fines involved, but that does not in and of itself rise to the level of you being able to void a contract take money back. You know, that would be extremely punitive for that. So it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out. And the two things that when this first came out a month ago that were interesting to me was, one, that this happened way back in January and July. And then two, that they made no attempt to file a grievance. Apparently the NFLPA was that this was an alley-oop grievance for them, but BA's team didn't want it, which appears to me like there was a forfeiture of $27 million in order to facilitate his release in unrestricted free agency, which I know fans hate that reading of it, but if that is the case, that is another brilliant move by his agent. Because can you imagine how many dudes in the league right now, if they could forfeit their guaranteed money to be an unrestricted free agent, they would pay for that deal? Because like you say, he's 27 years old, and there are like 7 or 8 teams that need true X receivers, and so he'll be the best on the market. And then the question that has to be asked, well, is he healthy? My answer to that is based on all that you've seen by the way his agent operates. If he truly wasn't healthy, why don't you go after that $27 million as a retirement gift? If you really believe that he's not going to be the same, you're trying. I would be fighting for that $27 million, especially in a case where it's there. They have no recourse for taking that money. It was the appeal or the grievance. It was a slam dunk. The 49ers would have lost that. But they was like, nah, we good. We all right with them voiding it because that means it's over in essence, which so at this point it is.
So my take is that, and who knows really who kind of, pulled the trigger on what. And it's quite possible that the Niners saw what was going on and they're like, you know what? Like, it is going to be better for us to get out of this contract too. So we're going to let all of this happen the way that they want it to happen. But the one thing that the Niners are really good at doing is shaping the narrative on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
And we only have to go back to Harbaugh and Colin Kaepernick. Two of the biggest things in a row where the player on the way out or the coach on the way out just got trashed to holy hell because of the way that it happened. So we know that the Niners are capable of that. So it's quite possible that they were okay with it because they also get the relief of having to deal with him. Yeah, they got hosed out of that money and they may feel some sort of way about that. But looking ahead, they may be like, look, this is better for us in the long term, or at least in the immediate future, because they're trying to win the Super Bowl in the next 2 or 3 years. And then they're going to have to play this restart game once those 2 or 3 years is over. And so if they look at it from that perspective, we got a 3-year shot. If we continue to fight this thing, then he's not going to play and it's just going to be a distraction. Let's get out of this. Maybe they think he's possibly damaged goods and they're like, you know, we can get out of this. And then on as he leaves, we're going to trash him on the way out. And, you know, which probably, I mean, I don't know how well that works considering he's such a young player, but, you know, trying to cause some sort of harm to his leverage in free agency. They did it with Kaepernick, but that was a league-wide situation. You had the president of the United States saying, don't sign this dude. So that is a different scenario, but that is not below the 49ers to do stuff like that. So I kind of expect that to happen. But I do think it is probably a cut our losses because this guy just does not want to be here. But then you go back to, could they, if they could go back in time to that moment where they had the Steelers on the phone, I'm sure they just say, okay, we're trading him no matter what. Like, that's just what we have to do. Knowing what they know now, you probably don't play this hand again and you just, you do that trade at that point. But it is unfortunate, but this is also the NFL. This happens in the NFL because of the way the contracts are structured. Some people, I mean, just look at the Micah Parsons situation. All the drama surrounding that deal, and then he gets traded to Green Bay. Unfortunately, he actually got hurt today. It looks like he may be done for the season. But, you know, these players, in order to kind of dictate the scenario, they do kind of have to stick their neck out in ways that may not make them very popular because the fan bases are so pro-team in almost all of these scenarios. But, yeah, it's an ugly thing, and I'm sure BA's popularity may take a hit in getting out the way that he did. But all he has to do is go out there and get 85 catches for 1,200 yards, and he's back in the good graces of his team and of the fans of that team. And that's kind of how the league works. So I don't hope that he does poorly. I know there are people who want him to do poorly, but this is just the business side of the NFL that's always so tricky. So, but this is probably until the offseason, when I do expect the narratives to come out, this is probably the last time we really have to talk about him until then. And then he moves on with his career and figures out now where he's going.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Absolutely. Can we discuss, spend a few seconds discussing or a few minutes discussing something else that I think that is like a non, that's a next year type of thing that kind of is intertwined with this game? I think there's two jobs. One is not quite open yet, but it's headed that way. And this job, the Atlanta job and the Tennessee job, are both tailor-made for Robert Saleh.
They were talking about it on the broadcast.
Oh, really? I wasn't listening with the sound on. Because I think Cam Ward is a dude. I think that they've got their quarterback. And when you look at that division, I think they're a Robert Saleh division, a Robert Saleh defense, and a wide receiver, Brandon Ayuk, maybe, away from being at least able to compete in the AFC South, which is not a very high bar. It's not a very high bar to be a competitor for that division title. It just never is every year. And that's the same thing with Atlanta, with the fact that they have crazy offensive talent. They don't have, you know, Penix is hurt, but maybe he could bring Mac along. I don't know. But Atlanta has so much offensive talent. Again, I just think Robert Saleh is a difference maker. He's shown it this year. He can take chicken and make chicken salad. He really is a really, really good defensive coach, and I'm willing to give him a pass on the Jets because nobody wins at the Jets, and that's just a really, really dysfunctional situation. But I think these two situations are places where you can win, like, and you can win quickly, because regardless of where you fall in the hierarchy of the league itself, you can be competitive in terms of making the playoffs through winning your division right now. Look, it looks like 9 wins is going to win the NFC South, and the Falcons look like they're going to win 7 games this year as constructed. I just think you throw somebody like Saleh into the mix there, and they are instant competitors in that division. And, you know, the AFC South is worse, I think. And so I just think that those would be good opportunities for him, because I have no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind from after there was really was no doubt other than you kind of worry about the fact that they regressed with him under the Jets. But it really sounded like that was a shit show. And then he decided that he was going to take on Aaron Rodgers. And then that was pretty much the end of his time there.
Wouldn't we all want to take on Aaron Rodgers at some point?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think he's a very good defensive coordinator, and I think he can be a very good head coach. And the thing about, you look at what's happening in New England, he is the kind of guy that he will always be able to come back and be a defensive coordinator and be paid at the top of the league doing that. So it's not like he's taking some sort of huge risk by taking another $60 million contract, you know, because both of these situations are situations that have been proven that you can win there. Those are not dysfunctional. They aren't the Raiders or the Browns or jobs like that, which I honestly think are beneath him. But I think these are two opportunities that where he could win. And I just think that he's going to get a job this hiring cycle. There'll be like 5 or 6 jobs, and there aren't 5 or 6 candidates better than him. That New York job is a good job too, but I think that's radioactive in terms of him, even if it was a good fit.
Right.
There's no way in hell they could hire him in New
immediately
York.
The media is on him.
Yeah.
Titans, by the way, if the Giants, the Raiders, and the Titans do not win another game this season, they all end up tied with 2 wins. The Titans would actually get the 3rd pick. So not only do you have Cam Ward, but you also come into 2026 having the third pick in the draft. And if the Raiders, I don't know how the Raiders are going to win another game. They look really bad. The Giants could sneak in there depending on what goes on, but you know, they're in the mix right there for a top three pick. So that is also attractive for somebody like Saleh is coming in. Yeah. You just drafted the top quarterback the previous year, and now you get another top pick and you can kind of retool in a division that's not great. Then you get the last place schedule at the same time for the following year. I could definitely see that happening.
Which, I mean, and again, that's why I am so much higher on him than I was, is because, look, you can make the case that, I mean, that the 2019 49ers defense, I mean, it was great. Those Jets defenses, even though the teams weren't good, they were good, but they had three all pros on those defenses. Mm-hmm. He's had all pros throughout. So you could kind of say, well, you can, I mean, I'm not saying that coaching well with talent is easy, because there are lots of teams that underperform. He's never had a problem underperforming, but this doing what he has done this year, and the numbers aren't great. They are middle of the pack in most categories. But when you factor in who it is he's doing it with, that I think for both him and Kyle, this is some of the best coaching. Now they both won at a much higher level than this team. Because I mean, the record is what it is, and I'm not going to shit on it. But this is not one of the best 49ers. This team is nowhere close to the 2023 team. You know, so from a talent standpoint, but they've won, and I think that the fact that they have performed as well as they have with the talent deficit that they're working under makes it even more impressive.
And you know, to Shelvin's point here. If Mustafa catches the balls that are up in the air, I mean, maybe the Titans only score 10 points. There was a pick that he had. There was another DB. I forget the DB who also had a possible pick. But then the great play where they got all the way down to the one and they scored that other touchdown. I think Mustafa, as that ball's in the air, he's got the better shot to intercept to make the catch than the actual wide receiver does, and then the wide receiver took it away from him. So you know that some of this is younger defensive players who do not have that nose for the football and the turnover quite yet,
and making plays. That has been a prop again, but that is why I think it's so impressive what they've done, because they even, you know, like Mykael Williams is a guy that is clearly talented. Alfred Collins is a guy that is clearly talented. CJ White, who had a heck of a game today. These are young guys that are talented, but just don't know how to play yet. I don't think that, I'm not saying it, you know, I've had people argue with me about, well, look at these plays that Mykael Williams and Alfred Collins. But yes, I see it. I see Alfred Collins. I'm not Mykael anymore, but I see Alfred Collins demolishing guards and crushing double teams. But I think he would admit that there are plays out there that he has left on the field at the end of those feats, which that's something I'm not criticizing him. He's a rookie. These are the first 13 or 14 games of his career. So I don't expect him necessarily to be Warren Sapp or Aaron Donald today. But at a certain point, you can't tell me that he's a future all pro without acknowledging the fact that he needs to start making these plays, because you don't become an all pro. And he has said that that's the standard. Well, you don't make all pro by occupying blocks or by defeating double teams or crushing guards and then just standing up over them. You have to, at the end of that, a play needs to be made. And again, I have no doubt that they will get there, but the fact that they have been as good as they have been with the inexperience that, and just flat out, there are guys playing that just aren't high quality NFL players. My man Flanagan Fowles, he was awful today. He was terrible. And Curtis Robinson wasn't much better. But great guy, though. Walter Payton, award winner. Shout out to that. But
when Bosa and Warner come back, it just makes everybody better.
Right. Right. And what you have seen, and why I have believed throughout this thing, they did the right thing. But I mean, Cleveland Farrell has played well, and that's great. But I am glad that rather than going out and just bringing in whoever's sitting on their couch, just letting these guys play and get the experience that they have. They look like they might have found something with Tatum Bethune. But then he'll end up being slotted properly once Fred comes back. Then he is, I don't think he's a number one or number two linebacker, but I think he could be an excellent number three linebacker. So you found that. I don't believe that Keon White is a top of the rotation lineman, but maybe he doesn't have to be. If you got him for a 6-7 pick swap and he ends up just being a sixth or seventh man, that's a good find. So I believe that, you know, when people were talking about, like, for example, when Lakin Tomlinson became available, that's fine. If you want to sign him to the practice squad, that's cool. But I don't know that I'm crazy about taking reps away from Burford and Colby to, because we know what Lakin Tomlinson is. I think this season, and the fact that they've been able to win along the way, seeing what you got with guys like Gifford and Burford and pick a name, I think that we'll be better off down the road. And I think you have to try to, you know, you talk about the two timelines as a Warrior fan, and you know, you make people vomit. But I think that you really, you try to do the best you can to win this season, but you can't get, like we were talking about around the trade deadline. I don't think you serve yourself by throwing a bunch of draft capital at bringing in somebody who's going to help you this season. I think you try to do the best you can to win, make trades on the margins, sign free agents out there, and try to get as best you can, but you don't do it in detriment to your future. I think they've got a lot of good things going on here, and I think another good draft will, we're better served by having another good, you know, another crop of the, you know, 200, picking from the 200 best players and bringing them in for on 4 years on rookie contracts than we would be trading one of those contracts for a replacement player, a replacement level veteran who might be a better player this year, but ultimately is not in the future plans.
Yeah, it seemed like they were only going to make a move for somebody if that person was going to stick around for some time. And what they were finding out is those were the players that everybody wanted, which jacked up the price on all of them.
And the price was high. The price was just too high. And that's okay. Like, they, like, apparently they were in on Jalen Phillips, but they were hesitant to do a third rounder, which a third rounder is somebody who is supposed to be a contributor for 4 years. I mean, that is high enough. That's a high enough pick where even if it's just a rotation player, that's a, you know, you don't want to trade that for a rental. And I don't know that they were going to be in on re-signing Jalen Phillips at the number that he's going to make. I just don't think they're going to, I know we want a bookend for Nick, but I guess we're hoping that's Michael. I don't think they're going to pay somebody else $30 million to be that, but I just, nothing in their history leads me to believe that that was ever even an option.
All right, let's get to this game. I think that the game showed me two things. And the first, I wanted to talk about Brock first, but then I thought, since we talked about Ayuk, we've talked about Juwan Jennings as a guy who is probably on his way out. But these last few games, he has showed why he is probably more valuable to a team like the 49ers than other teams. Not only from the pass receiving perspective, but also from the blocking perspective. Like there was a specific play where they just lined him up in the backfield. They were just like, you're just going to play the fullback spot and you're just going to run through whomever is in your way. I thought, wow, this dude, that's how they used him. That was cool. But I wonder if because of the BA situation, they look at Juwan's scenario a little bit differently. And if I'm reading the reporting correctly, Juwan and the 49ers were way far apart as far as what his value was to the team. You know, maybe he was looking for like $20 million and they're like, nah, you're probably more towards like eight or nine. And then, you know, at some point, can you meet in the middle? And they didn't meet in the middle. But I wonder now if you can talk Juwan down from that $20 million price. And instead, maybe it's closer to like 12, 13. And you sign him to like a 3-year deal because of just the value he provides your team for the style of football that you play. The way that he played today, I was like, gosh, he is definitely valuable to this football team. And I hope, and look, the cap stuff is the cap stuff. And a lot of decisions are not made strictly for merit. They're made strictly because of how the cap works and how much you can put in, you know, how much money you can give to one set subset of players because you've given this other subset of players so much money. If he can kind of get talked down from that, like, you know, I want to make $20 million or whatever. I do wonder if they can come to some sort of agreement because I think he's just going to be so much better on this football team than some of the other football teams because of the way that he plays that position. Like he has players on the other team just calling him out in the media because he doesn't stop blocking. He doesn't stop talking. He's just going at guys. And that is the kind of player that I think works well in this Kyle Shanahan offense. I just wonder how much, and maybe there's a team out there. It's quite possible there's a team out there who's like, you know what? You're worth more than what they're willing to give you. But we'll see when that happens. But this is the first game all season they need to figure out how to make this work.
Yeah. I just don't think that he'll have to settle for that low a contract. Now, I think that was a posturing situation because, of course, you asked for 20, but you'll take 17 or 18. And I always felt that Darnell Moody contract in Atlanta, he's a different type of player, but a similar type player. And Rashad Bateman in Baltimore, similarly, those guys signed for between 15 and 18 million.
Yeah, maybe you get to 15.
I think that's the market for Juwan. And I also believe that when you watch around the league, that the proliferation of this Shanahan or McVay style offense, there are a lot of places who would appreciate having a player like Juwan Jennings on their team, and they don't necessarily, he doesn't necessarily, that's one of the great things is for him to add value. He doesn't have to get 12 targets a game to impact the game. You know, so I think that ideally slotted, he's always been ideally suited for his role in this offense. He's a wide receiver 3 that is like a 6 tight end, basically. I don't believe that he was miscast last year due to injury as a wide receiver 1. I don't think that I don't think that that's that you are again, Kendrick Bourne was a wide receiver one in New England. That doesn't make you a wide receiver one. I don't think he is a good wide receiver one. He's not a wide receiver one on a team that's going to win anything. But I think that he can be a major contributor to a championship as a wide receiver three on the right team. Well, we know he can. Yep. We know he can. He is a Colton McKivitz missed block from being a Super Bowl MVP. So, I mean, he definitely, there's proof that he can be that guy. And I would love to see him be here. And I would hate for Parag's number crunching to be the reason that he's not.
Yeah, absolutely. He, like you just pointed out, he only had three catches for 37 yards. Gets in the end zone twice. He dropped one late that would have been a really good play, but just I think he's better than his numbers are ever going to say he is, which is a hard thing to negotiate when it comes to that stuff. But the other thing about this game to me was Brock Purdy, because as we've said all season long with the Mac Jones stuff. And we love Mac too. It's nothing against Mac, but Brock Purdy with his legs created the opportunity for them to throw the football downfield today. He was 23 of 30 for 295 yards and three touchdowns. Ricky Pearsall shakes loose 6 for 96. Kittle shakes loose 8 for 88. And they didn't even play the dump-off game to McCaffrey that much, which kind of tells you that they were able to throw the football downfield. McCaffrey only had one catch today. So that Brock Purdy's legs and his understanding of the pocket and the timing mechanism that goes on in his head, knowing when to escape, knowing when to step up. He did get crushed on one throw, which was a great throw, by the way. But his value... his legs are so valuable to the opportunities to make plays, because as we know, the offensive line is only getting to about one Mississippi, and then, you know, it's kind of like he's on the run. But this is the best game I think since he's been back, and it wasn't against the best team, clearly, maybe against a better team. You know, things don't happen exactly the same way. But man, this is why he is QB1. His escapability and his ability to throw on the run and to create plays and to have the receivers knowing, like, okay, Brock's scooting out. This is our turn to kind of change this route and just find an open spot because Brock's going to find us. He was great in all of that today.
He really was. And two things. One, I think we as fans have to remember that you have to use healthy in air quotes. He's clearly well enough to be out there, but he did all of that with that mobility. You can't convince me that that toe is still 100%. So I give him credit for that, that he is doing this with, you know, I've just heard the turf toe is not something that you really heals. It's just, especially if you don't do like Burrow did and just have the surgery. So he didn't do that. He just rested it. And now he's just out there gutting it out. And that's great. And then I think we've talked about this for the past several seasons. You see a maturity and maybe the fact that he is a little bit more judicious and less YOLO about his running, which is just something, is just the maturation of him as a player, because we talked about a lot, I know, in previous seasons, in the Super Bowl season especially, that it just always felt like that is a part of the game that for whatever reason, that, you know, Kyle, in an effort to protect him, really has never deployed a real RPO aspect of this offense, which again, clearly he is more than capable of running. So you are 100% correct. He was great today, and it just, he did in big and small ways show why he is a guy that, you know, he's the guy. I was never on that Mac train, because I've got a Mac thing that is probably not 100% fair, but I'm beyond this thing with Brock and like they're like being a referendum after every game, you know, him throwing three picks. Now all of a sudden quarterback continental. No, he had a bad game. Yeah. He's the quarterback, for better or for worse. He's the quarterback. And I think that he's our guy, and he is more than capable and competent to get us where we need to go. I think he has the special qualities that I think that when we get back to where we want to be and we are in those big spots again, I just happen to believe that I think this dude is the dude to lead us where we want to be ultimately. So yeah. I think he's a good quarterback.
We don't have to talk too much more about this game because it was, you know, like it was a little sleepy. The thing that I wanted to talk about, though, was in the lead up to Indianapolis. There's a couple things that really worry me about this Indianapolis game. And then there's a couple of things that I really like based off of what Indianapolis did today. Now, Indianapolis, I think they're like they've lost four in a row or something like that. They're also 6-1 at home. So they play better now. Who knows how they play without QB1. But the thing about Indianapolis is they're going to give the ball to Jonathan Taylor 25 times. As we saw today, this run defense can be pretty rough sometimes. Tony Pollard, I thought he was going to break one and take it to the house. He didn't. He came close, but that was just my sense when he got the football. Now, on the flip side, if you do just really focus on the run, Phillip Rivers today, I think he completed like just passes to running backs for the most part. Like there wasn't a whole lot of stretching the field. Now, some of that is Seattle as well, but
mm-hmm.
I think
just trying not to get killed,
right? I think that is what you test, right? Is you test, hey, let's make Phillip Rivers make some plays. He's not very mobile. He only had one game back, and I don't know how long has this dude been retired? Like 3 years?
5 years?
Oh
five
my god, years. That's insane. And we haven't seen it. Have we seen anything like that in the NFL before?
Mm-mm.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. So that, I think that leans a little bit better towards what the Niners can handle, but I am worried about that run game. I am worried about Jonathan Taylor going like 20 for 150 and three touchdowns. That is kind of in the back of my mind as far as what could really stop this 49er team. He's going to be the best. He and Christian are going to be the two best football players on the field when they are on the field. So
he is top of the food chain.
Yeah.
He is top of the food chain. He is really good.
and so, you know, Indianapolis, like you said, AFC South, they started out hot. They are now 8-6 after having lost this game to Seattle. So they are fighting as well. And they are in must win mode. They are in desperation mode. And I think this is it's going to be a really, really good game to test the Niners and to really tell us who they are. You know, can you go into Indy on Monday night and win a game? Because if you don't, now you're kind of in control of your destiny at this point, right? Like you are a game ahead of Green Bay. And you are a game ahead, a game or two games ahead of the Lions now. So it's really about if you win out, you're fine. Shelvin thinks that we only need to win one more. He might be right,
Right.
But at the same time, you're going into the last week of the season worrying about tiebreakers and rooting for certain teams to lose and watching the scoreboard. And that can be fun. I would rather not have to do that. I would like to clinch, you know, the week before that, so you don't have to worry. And then you can rest your players a little bit in that last game because you're going to be playing wild card weekend. So it's just some of those things. But what are your thoughts about this upcoming Indy game?
I am on board with you 100% about Jonathan Taylor. And then even more so is Tyler Warren, because, again, people were shitting on D Winners during the game and his coverage. Well, I mean, he's one of the best coverage linebackers in the league when he's playing on two healthy knees, but he is clearly not healthy. And Tyler Warren is a problem. He is a matchup nightmare for this team. And then kind of Phillip Rivers, I felt the same way about him as I felt about Aaron Rodgers. Can you compare him to peak Phillip Rivers? No. Can you compare him to the best quarterbacks in the NFL now? No. But is he better than Riley Leonard and Brett Rypien? Probably. I would say yes. So that is where they're at. Is I would much rather be facing Riley Leonard or Brett Rypien than facing Phillip Rivers, because I know what I know for sure is that whatever the 49ers show him, he's seen it a million times, and he's going to make the right decisions. Now, the question becomes, physically, how does he hold up after being hit three or four times? But if I'm looking at this box score, I didn't get to watch any of that game because I was watching our game. But just looking at this box score, what's telling me is he's not giving you much like Rodgers at this stage of his career. He's not giving you an opportunity to hit him. He is just deciding where he's going with the ball and getting the ball out of his hands. So the question then becomes, how do you cover? Are you able to stay covered up and blitz or do whatever it is to try to stop him from just nicking you to death? Also, with the knowledge of you probably have to have eight or nine in the box to deal with Jonathan Taylor, because, you know, they did not. I thought coming into this game that Spears and Pollard would play a much bigger role than they did. But I can guarantee you, like you said, you can just mark that down. You can mark 25 carries down for Jonathan Taylor. There's nothing that's going to happen that's going to make them go away from running the ball. And so the question then becomes, what are we able to endure and stop them? Because like you say, it could get ugly fast with this dude, because he's everything. He's a thumper, but he's a thumper who could break a tackle and take it 70. I mean, so it really is, like you say, it's funny that obviously we're watching the same game, but I had that feeling on several occasions that Pollard was going to bust one. And given the opportunity, Taylor will. So that it's going to be the fact that is it a 10 o'clock game next week?
No,
is
Monday
it a
night.
Morning game? Oh, okay. Well, that helps. That helps that, you know, we get that whole extra day and it's a night game. So that I think that's better for us, because
I mean, I think that just makes it more fun for sure. Having a Monday night game. Mm-hmm. So Shelvin's making me feel a little bit better, because the Niners. So it goes Niners right now. The playoff picture has the Niners 6 and the Packers 7. Below the Packers at 8 are the Lions. So the Lions would have to jump up 2 spots to knock out the Niners. And I think we actually have the tiebreaker. So let's say we go 1-2 and they go 3-0. If we end up tied, if both of us end up tied at 11-6, I think we hold the tiebreaker, because we would have the better divisional record. They already have 3 losses in their division. So that would be the Niners would actually win the tiebreaker there if I'm reading that correctly. So if the Niners only need to win one, then you got Indy, you got Chicago, you got Seattle to win one. Still, there's not an easy game left. They're all going to be tough games. But if you play it as in you got to win one, then at least it looks like, if I'm reading this correctly, that the Niners probably can just clinch by winning one game.
I sure wish that Bears game had been in September as now, but they are getting, because they are getting better, and they are starting, you know, they're using Rocky parlance. They're starting to believe, man. They're going to be a problem, man. They are good, they've got a big game this next week, so we'll
see.
Ben
Johnson should just say, "I'm just going to take my shirt off every time we win." That seems to fire them up. They seem to love that.
Coach with no shirt on.
All right. So we'll be back next Monday after Niners Colts.
I'll be ready.
And
I'll be ready and fired up to go.
Yeah, it's
coming back after a win.
Look,
hopefully.
Look, I think we're all pretty realistic expectations for what this football team is. But at the same time, like we've been saying, you get there and then it's like, hey, you have a shot. And that's really all that
you want.
You're
playing with house money at this point. Yeah. I really believe that. I believe because I am not a binary all or nothing fan. Well, did you win the Super Bowl? Well,
right.
Man, look, 31 teams don't win the Super Bowl. So I am not one who is going to measure the success or failure of any individual season in those binary terms. That's just not how my fandom works. But because already they have done enough to make this a successful season,
yep,
in my book. They have played and won way more games than you would have reasonably expected with the amount of injuries that they've had. And so even to right now, even if they lost all three of these games, I would still chalk this up as a successful season. Obviously, I don't want them to lose the next three.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not one that says that they win all three. My fandom doesn't allow me to even think about, well, maybe they can win seven in a row. Okay. I mean, that's just not, it would be great if it happened, but I think I have a pretty clear understanding of what this team is, and they play hard, but we're going to get to a place in this season where we're starting to play teams where the talent deficit is going to show up, and there's nothing, and that's fine. I think that I saw something that's like, we're like a 98%
mm-hmm.
of getting in. So, I mean, we're going to be there, and I would be happy if we just go in and we in the last quarter, the last 4 minutes of that wild card game, we're in it.
Yeah,
that's great to me. However it turns out, I would hope that in these playoff games, however many of them that we have, that we are just competitive. And from what I have seen this season, that unless, you know, you just get jumped on like the Rams jumped on us, if the games are close, Saleh and Shanahan are going to be able to make calls that if we are in a close game, they can win these games for us. And that means, hell, man, that's all you could ask for. That's all I expect and ask for. So I'm excited for the next month of the season. I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be great.
All right. Want to thank Shelvin for hanging in there and chatting with us, and also the other folks who are watching live on the channel, but we're not chatting. Hop in. Exactly. I hope everyone's having a good December so far. The next time we talk will be like 3 days before Christmas, which is nuts. So we'll see everybody next Monday night for Niners and Colts. And for Rod, I'm Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.